Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. David Murray to the podcast. Dr. Murray is professor of Old Testament and practical theology at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary. He's also pastor of Grand Rapids Free Reformed Church. Dr. Murray, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to speak with you on this topic. I'd love to talk about helping preachers, and hopefully that will be the result of our conversation.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Today, we're going to be talking about the pastor and his rest, and really building that conversation from your recent book entitled Reset, Living a Grace-Paced Life in a Burnout Culture. It's out by Crossway here recently, just a fantastic read and very helpful book for those in ministry. Dr. Murray, before we get into the meat of the conversation today, perhaps just a few words of orientation about yourself and your ministry there, both at the seminary and also at the local church.
Sure. Yeah, I was a pastor in Scotland for about 12 years when I was called here to Puritan Reformed Seminary to train pastors, and I've been doing that now for 10 years, but after about 5 or 6, I was just really missing pastoral ministry. I was preaching all over the place, but really missing that relational contact with souls and being a shepherd of sheep. And so we came to a sort of arrangement whereby a local church here wants to call me as pastor, and I give them part of my time and give part of my time to the seminary. And you know, when you're teaching practical theology, it's good to actually practice theology. And it just gives you a wee bit more credibility with the students, and it keeps you in touch with real life. So it works really well.
And so you wrote this book. It came out earlier this year. And your story, your personal story, frames the intro to the book, and it's kind of woven throughout. So again, as we begin to think about this topic, the pastor and his rest, just share your story with us as to what moved you to write the book, and more importantly, what moved you to incorporate some of these disciplines and boundaries into your life, and the lesson that is contained from your personal story that's woven throughout this book.
Yes, I think my story is very similar to many pastors, many people in ministry. I think partly because the ministry can be so enjoyable, partly because ministry is so unlimited in its opportunities, especially today, and partly because of accessibility to pastors now through social media, etc. I think a lot of pastors and those in ministry are experiencing burnout, leading to physical, moral, emotional, relational problems. And that's really what happened to me. When I came over here about 10 years ago, ministry just seemed to multiply, opportunities multiplied. It was all good stuff, but really it was at the expense of personal health, of relationships, and eventually God stopped me. He allowed blood clots to form in my legs, which then burst and went to my lungs and ended in hospital. And I learned some lessons from that. I did slow down a bit, but sadly, pretty quickly went back to my default pace, and then a couple of years later, God put me back in hospital with the same issue. And people with blood clots in their lungs, a lot of them die on the spot. People don't usually get two chances at it. So I decided that time, with the Lord's help, I had to learn some long-term lessons and really began to research the impact of stress in the body and the brain and on the soul, and began to see how serious a matter this was. And as I shared my own story and what I was learning about it, a lot of pastors were getting in contact with me and ended up in a lot of counselling, some face-to-face, some over the phone, and began to realise just what a widespread problem this was. And Crossway, through knowing some of the pastors I was helping, asked me if I would share my experience, my accumulated wisdom, with the wider public via the book. And that's what I tried to do. I've just tried to be really honest. And I think a lot of pastors resonate with it and identify with it. And hopefully through my mistakes, it can prevent some others and help others who are in the midst of making the same mistakes.
Now, you touched on a host of tributaries that led to your personal kind of vortex, a physical challenge, and sense of being overwhelmed, and the results there. You mentioned the reality that, that ministry is unlimited, I think is the phrase you used just then. And, you know, I pastored or served as interim pastor for about 10 years in different churches. And you had to work through that even personally because ministry is unlimited. And I'm a to-do list kind of guy. I'm a task-oriented guy. And I like to be able to work through responsibilities and work through tasks. But the daunting reality of ministry is that to-do list is literally never-ending. There can always be another phone call to make, always another visit to make. You can always spend more time preparing the sermon. There is a never-ending reality to the work. So how did you process that? How did you begin to process that psychological, physical realities that, that ministry just is unlimited by the nature of it?
Yeah, and I think as you put it there, Jason, the more you do, the more there is to be done. Ministry actually multiplies. You know, the more you preach, the more people hear that you're preaching, the more people will ask you to preach, the more you counsel, the more people hear your counseling, the more people ask you to counsel. And so you cannot be limited by the opportunities, either the excess or the lack of them. You have to begin to ask yourself, you know, what are my limits? Not what are the limits of ministry out there, but what is my capacity? And that's different for everyone, and it's different at different stages of life. And one has to look, and I tried to do that in the book, you know, you have to look at certain warning signs that are maybe arising in your life, maybe physical or emotional or moral or spiritual or relational. And, you know, when there are a lot of these flashing, then it's time to really stop, take stock, and begin to make adjustments. And the biggest, I think the hardest maybe for most ministers is to say that massive word, no. And it's a skill that is in short supply, but it's not just a ministry saver, it's a lifesaver. And it's really something, a skill that has to be learned. And I think it'd be better if we learned it without crashing and burning as I did. And I think it can be learned if we are wise, if we have good accountability in our lives, if we have good, faithful Christian elders, friends, colleagues around us, good input from family, then I think we can learn when to say no, how to say no, and so actually ultimately do better ministry. Maybe not more ministry, but better ministry. Do the things that God has called us specifically to do. And I think, again, that's one of the keys to this. It's really trying to discern, of all these, say, 10 ministry opportunities here in front of me just now, which would God have me to do? Which has He equipped me and trained me to do? And which, yeah, I can do it, but I'm not the best at doing this. And to do it will impede my success or ability in other areas I am called to serve God in.
I tell our students here, pronouncing the word no is one of the most important disciplines one can cultivate. And it can be liberating to get to a point of maturity and self-confidence and perhaps just self-awareness to know it's fitting and right and sometimes necessary to say no. Being able to pronounce that word is just a liberating reality for one's life. I'm curious in your own journey, saying no, determining no, whether it's a speaking opportunity, a writing opportunity, or just kind of the warp and woof of daily ministry life. Do I take on this additional counseling request or do I not? Do I seek to make these hospital visits or do I not? Being able to draw boundaries around your life and protect days and Sabbaths and rests and so forth. The role of others in making that determination, the role of elders, the role of lay leaders, the role of perhaps your spouse, how have others helped you develop the discipline and the instincts as when one should say no?
Yeah, I think it begins with one's relationship to God and, you know, your sense of personal identity before God, that you're not deriving your identity, your sense of significance and purpose from ministry, but from your relationship with God. And then secondly, you know, determining really what areas of ministry has God equipped me to serve Him in and I get many requests, like I'm sure you do, Jason, to speak on different topics. I'm not an expert on all these topics, and so I've sort of developed the freedom to say, look, I can do this, but here's somebody that can do this much better. So I think that's a starting point, a relationship with God and what God wants us to do. And then the second most important thing in my life is my wife. She knows me best. She actually was warning me before my crashes, and unfortunately then I was not heeding her as I ought. I would trim a bit, but not radically. So now I know she knows me better than I know myself in some ways. And she sees warning signs. She sees, you know, when maybe I'm not sleeping properly, or when I'm irritable, or maybe even sermons are not what they should be, to overwork in other areas. So she speaks into my life very honestly, and now I listen. And then I since my burnouts as well, I also involve my elders a lot more in running past them my schedule, bringing invitations to speak and major invitations to write in front of them. And they also are a really good filter. They know, you know, sometimes they'll be just, yes, 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 that's all fine. Then other times they know there are needs in the congregation, there are problems that, you know, this is taking too big a toll. You have to say no for the now, for the moment to this. So I think just these are my three main areas. I also have a friend who helps me, but I would say these are the three areas: relationship to God, relationship with my wife, relationship with my elders, and just to try and be really honest and transparent and not hide anything in these three areas.
I want to shift gears here to Charles Spurgeon, and not just Charles Spurgeon, but other heroes of ours in the faith. Christian George here, curator of our Spurgeon Library at Midwestern Seminary, posted an article a few days ago about Spurgeon's schedule. And it was more of a kind of a, to satisfy those curious about such things, especially those interested in the life of Spurgeon, than it was to hold up Spurgeon's schedule as a model of virtue or something that we should be emulating. I noticed that you posted a brief kind of response to that, and not pushing back against Christian, but just responding to the fact that we have to be careful how we hold up schedules like Spurgeon, and pointing to the fact the second half of Spurgeon's life was marked by physical maladies, not to mention depression and other challenges he faced. And whether it's Spurgeon or the Puritans or the Reformers, much of their physical challenges was due to the fact that, you know, ministered an era of pre-modern medicine, but also the fact they had schedules that were just rigorous and are not sustainable for any human being. Right. And so help us contextualize how we should view the schedules of our heroes and juxtapose their schedules alongside of what you're calling for as far as a more healthy and sustainable model of ministry.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jason. And I have to deal with that on an almost daily basis, because my colleague and boss is Joel Beakey, who is Mr. Productivity himself.
Right.
And works sort of 8 hours, 8 days a week sort of thing. But I think, first of all, I think you've got to say there are people that God does equip with exceptional stamina and ability. So it's not to say that there aren't, you know, exceptional people that God gives exceptional grace to. However, I think from reading a lot of biographies, especially my early Christian life, and reflecting on it now, I think that God gave that exceptional ability and grace for exceptional people at exceptional times. So, you know, during certain times in Spurgeon's life, for example, he really didn't have a choice in a way as to the number of controversies he was engaged in and things like that. I think the problem is when the exceptional becomes the norm, when we maybe in a period of ministry where we really don't have a choice in a way as to how many hours we're working and how long and you know, going weeks without days off. The problem is when that becomes the norm for us or the norm for others as well. And so I think, yes, there are exceptions, but it's for exceptional periods rather than lifelong. And I think what you see in people like Spurgeon, Calvin, and many others that I've held up to others in my life as well as examples, that the vast majority of, in fact, I don't know anyone who escaped this, either shortened their life by early death, or shortened their ministry effectiveness or reduced it by through ill health. And I think, you know, all of us have a limited amount of fuel, and we either burn it all quickly or we try and manage it better and replenish ourselves better. So we don't want to be, you know, feet up in the couch, on the sofa, and, you know, leaning back saying, oh, you know, I need to preserve myself. But neither must we be pedal to the floor. And I think that's, again, where personal knowledge comes into it. I'm not Spurgeon, I'm not Calvin, I'm not Lloyd Jones, I'm David Murray. This is how God has made me. Here are my limitations. And so knowing the sort of impact of these people being held up as examples on driving me forward, I suppose maybe I'm a wee bit over-sensitive to the possibility of that being used, especially for younger ministers, and then getting into bad patterns and habits that will be difficult to break until it breaks them.
Very helpful and very well stated. I want to shift here in the conversation, and boy, time is flying by. I want to shift here to the theological foundations for rest. So let's say a person is listening to this podcast and they're tracking with us here. They see some of the practical realities behind burnout. They see some of the practical benefits of rest. Help us to think through here briefly just the theological underpinnings of rest.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's some very explicit verses in the Bible about rest, especially the rest of sleep. We find that in the Psalms in a number of places. But I think if we go even more fundamentally into just a theology of the body, that's where I try to begin in my book, to really try and understand what it means to be an embodied person. We maybe sometimes tend to over-spiritualize ourselves, and I think one of the keys going forward is to try and not just sort of see yourself as soul beings, but as body beings as well. And so you go to, say, something like 1 Corinthians 6, and it teaches us that we are a temple, our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. Our bodies have been bought with a price. Our bodies are members of Christ, not just our soul. And piling all these truths up, all that theology up, the apostle comes to this conclusion, therefore, glorify God in your body. I don't think that always means, you know, burn your body out and give yourself in such a way that eventually your body breaks. I think it means that we are to care and steward for our body, care for and steward our bodies, just as we do with our finances, just as we do with our relationships, which means that we use them but don't abuse them, that we try and figure out, again, very personally, what that means in terms of how much sleep I need, a day off a week, times of rest even throughout the day and refreshment, and just trying to figure out the general rhythm that God has put in our specific body. And we do, we all have a rhythm, and it's trying to find that and live with it and work with it and cooperate with it rather than fight against it. And again, I think the end result is that we don't do less ministry, but we do ministry better, and we accomplish the things that God wants us to do more than what everybody else or even we ourselves want to do. Because without rest, you know, we're never really going to get a sense of what we have to do with our lives and our time. Rather, we're just going to be, you know, jumping at the next demand one after another, after another, after another.
So let's say for those listening, if they're convinced, they're convinced about the importance of rest theologically, biblically. They're convinced about the importance of rest practically. Give us a word of encouragement about what it means to recreate. What does it mean to truly have be a person, to be a minister, that recreation is a helpful complement to one's life?
Yeah, I think we can go to the past and also to the present to help us understand this. It's very interesting just doing research into ministerial writings, pastoral theologies of 150, 200 years ago. There's actually a very strong emphasis in these books on the need for the pastor to have times of recreation. I mean, even Spurgeon had his cigar times, you know. But one of the emphasis they had in that was in order for the pastor to maintain creativity and imagination. The pastor's brain is such a key tool for the pastor in terms of thinking through sermons, in terms of processing problems, in terms of being decisive and coming up with good solutions for people in counseling. And when our brains are exhausted, whether through too much ministry, too much technology, say, too little sleep, then our sermon's going to be stale, our leadership is going to be stale, our counseling is going to be just, you know, routine and mundane without too much radical insight. And therefore, I think just even for that, for the importance of having a creativity, an insight, a discernment, an ability to be imaginative in our sermons and in our solutions, recreation is so important. And it's not just the past, you know, modern science, which I quote a lot in the book, is extremely convincing of this. And it's not just Christians that are talking about this today, but, you know, many secular sources are discovering the emotional, mental, relational benefits of having downtime. And it's extremely hard today to get mental downtime because of our accessibility and because of our, well, I'll just call it what it is, our addiction to social media. And therefore our brains are just in constant firing mode and very little time for the chemicals and the electrics and all that in our brain to be replenished through rest and refreshment. So I think, you know, wherever you go, backwards to the past or up to the present, there's plenty of motivation that we can find so that this is not just something that becomes I ought to, but this is something I want to do for my own soul's sake, but also for the good of those I serve.
You've made the case. You've made it compellingly in the context of this conversation. You've made it more thoroughly in your book, Reset, Living a Grace-Paced Life in a Burnout Culture. Especially this time of year, as we're recording, it's in the summer and a season when many of us seek to have periods of downtime, of protracted downtime, to be with family and to reprioritize and recalibrate our own lives. Dr. Murray, I want to thank you for joining us on Preaching and Preachers, and I want to thank you for your work, Reset, and the conversation we had today. And I pray your book gets a wide reading and gets serious implementation in the lives of many, many ministries. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jason, and may God bless your work and your heart for helping pastors.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.